At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, May 9th, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and we're excited for this hour with you, unpacking all the news that comes in each and every day, and helping set the frame of mind for you to make good decisions with your money. And that's what it's about. So many people are just about the headlines and trying to get that tip. This is not about that. Okay. If you want to hear bells and whistles and banging a horn, go watch Cramer, right? This is not Cramer. This is not CNBC. This is about real analysis of markets, of asset classes, of businesses, et cetera. And our main avenue to educate you each day is through your questions. And so that's why we encourage your calls at 888-99-CHART. But we also bring you topics that we think are important as well. So we're going to run down those here in a little bit, as well as give you the market performance for today. But right after, we tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, Justin. Hi, Luke. This is Kurt from Ohio. I'm just calling about Powell Industries, P-O-W-L. Seen it do pretty well. I've held on to it for a little while. Just wanted to know what you think it's going to do from here. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Looking at Powell Industries, P-O-W-L is the symbol. Just pull it up on all of my systems here. Let's see. This is a company that has boomed lately. And what they do is they manufacture power substations, packages, switchgear, circuit breakers, generators, motor controls, etc. They are in the electrical business. And it's a booming business. It is one of the most underappreciated parts of the market today. And I think this is one of the areas that's going to have strong staying power. Because no matter what happens with AI, we are going to be using more energy either way. Think of electric cars, the demand on electric grid there, and then obviously AI centers that are rapidly deploying their data centers to support the system. And that is requiring a lot of data. And then you combine that with a electrical grid that's very old. It needs a lot of upgrades. And so companies like Powell are doing very, very well. And that's why earnings gone from pre-pandemic, only 85 cents a share, $1.38 in 2020, all the way down to 5 cents a share in 2021, but made $4.50 last year, expect to make $9.20 this year, and then $9 again next year. So based on forward-looking earnings, you're still in a high teens multiple with revenue growth at 50%, earnings growth 300%. So the technicals are good. I have no problem with this. Now, it is a small cap name, only about a $2 billion market cap, but they do have a ton of cash in their balance sheet now. About $500 million in just cash. So no long-term debt, highly profitable, and in the right trends. And obviously the trend of the stock is doing well on top of it. And what are they doing with that cash? Let's take a look. Are they buying back shares? Just pulling up the data here. No, that would be my biggest worry, is they are continuing to issue more shares. I don't love that. But everything else about the company looks pretty solid. The valuation is not out of whack. Their balance sheet, like I said, is very clear. And you know that dividend yield, only 0.6%. A lot of people are going to look at that. Oh, that's not that attractive, because they're only looking at the dividend yield. They're not looking at the underlying power of the business, which lasts over the trailing 12 months, free cash flow of $221 million. And you divide that by the enterprise value, you have about a 15% free cash flow yield. Like that. I can't argue with this one. This was, I'm going to give Powell a thumbs up. P-O-W-L is the symbol. Now let's get to the show for the rest of the 45 minutes that we have together. My main focus point is in regards to GDP and why GDP is likely to slow for the rest of the year. Even though the first quarter GDP was looked not that great, I think it was 1.6% growth, there were some caveats to that, but truly GDP growth should slow as we progress through the year. But there's a surprising reason why. We're going to dig into that. Also, we have some other topics on the docket. One is in regards to the fiscal impact. Fiscal impact on GDP, on the economy, and what those trends are telling us on both the state, federal, and local levels. Also, Berkshire Hathaway. We tried to get to this yesterday, but Luke and I didn't have time, but it was about the investors that are kind of taking over the portfolio. And they did really well when they were put in place in 2012 and 2013. But since then, they haven't done very well. They haven't outperformed Buffett or the market. So the question is, are they the right people to usher Berkshire into the next era, which, you know, is rapidly coming? Obviously, we have the loss of Charlie Munger, and Warren is 93. So you never know what could happen there. And then lastly, if we have time, we're going to look at the difficult situation the Fed is kind of stuck in from looking at financial conditions as well as the growth of inflation. Okay. So that's what's on the docket for me. Now, we also are going to get to your voice bank questions. One is in regards to having a second high risk account. That'll be an interesting question, as well as Equinix. EQIX is the symbol. We will also field some questions from the comment section over on our YouTube channel. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. Then we're going to do a short break. On the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. But please remember, you can call once again anytime, 24/7, 365 at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. Two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go take a look at the market today. It was a solid day. You know, we talked about how boring the market's been over the past couple of days, but that was, in hindsight, just a bit of consolidation, near resistance, and now we're threatening to break out of that resistance. Pretty wild, you know, pretty interesting considering just a mild pullback in markets, nothing dramatic. You're talking about a pullback to the 100-day moving average, a 5 to 6% drop from peak to trough, and now we're approaching those all-time highs on the S&P. Now, I still think it might have a little trouble truly breaking out here, but ultimately, as we talked yesterday, earnings are pretty solid. You had large cap stocks up about 54 basis points today. Small cap stocks up nearly 1%, 0.9%, so 90 basis points there. The big drag on the markets today, large cap growth. Roblox was down 22%. Tesla down 1.5% there. Robinhood was down 3%, Marathon Digital down 2%. You had Apple up 1%, Warner Brothers up 3%. And let's see, any other big notable gain? Vital Farms, that one's been on a tear, up 27% today. Arhaus up 17%. I'm just kind of digging into some of the big movers here. Duolingo down 18%. So certainly some big movers. We're still at the back end of earnings season. There are some earnings that continue to come out. But overall, corporate profits are pretty solid. And so it's, you know, you get the backdrop of good liquidity situation when it comes to reserves in the banking system, the Treasury General account, which is pretty high, as well as the reverse repo facility over the Fed that still remains in the hundreds of billions of dollars range. So all of the powers that be, you know, they have a lot of ammunition to drain those accounts and get dollars into the system. And so that's why I've been saying it's really hard to see a major drawdown in equities because you're not likely to see a credit event. That's what last spring was, right? It was a credit event around Silicon Valley Bank and a few other banks out there. And the Fed came in and kind of papered over those issues like they normally do, helped liquidity, and off we went. And now credit spreads remain relatively tight. And so as long as you continue to see that, it's hard to argue for major pullbacks in markets. Now, could we get another slight dip in June? That's certainly possible. But right now you're seeing gold breakout. Gold had a very, very good day today, especially the gold miners. So GLD was up over about 1.5%. The GDX, that was up $1.20, up nearly about 4% on that. So the miners and gold are breaking out. Precious metals are just killing right now. It's definitely the place to be. What's interesting is that if you go look at Bitcoin, you know, the digital gold, everyone gets all excited about it. This thing is just languishing. Gold is crushing Bitcoin right now. And you have to ask yourself, you know, was the attention misguided? Because basically since the beginning of March, gold has been outperforming Bitcoin. I'm just looking at a ratio between the GLD and the BitB, which is one of the Bitcoin ETFs, the Bitwise Bitcoin ETF. And gold is starting to truly outperform. So this is why I say when people get so excited about crypto, yes, it's in the news and it's interesting to talk about and it's fresh and exciting. But, you know, there's something to be said about the monetary history of gold and its hedge against inflation and monetary debasement. It's undefeated there, right? And Bitcoin has different correlations. And higher interest rates means there are other opportunities for that type of for that capital to invest in. And clearly Bitcoin is struggling under that newer higher interest rate regime. And you just look here, it peaked out. When did Bitcoin peak out? March 13th, around 72,000. Now it's at 63,000, while gold has broken out the other way. So I just wanted to highlight that because so many people are in love with crypto, but you know, there's something to be said about exposure to gold. Let's go to Richard in the Bay Area. He wants to look at GRBK.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have this since it was 20. So my base price was 20.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously it's done very well since then, but in the past few months, maybe a year, it's stalled. And it still looks cheap to me based on earnings. The debt is low, where they're positioned, where they make their homes is attractive, mm-hmm. relatively. And so I don't know, should I dump it and move on to something else or keep it and to see if it goes up further based on earnings?
Well, for everyone else out there, this is Green Brick Partners, GRBK, and they are a home builder, mainly building single-family homes in the Dallas and Atlanta markets. It's a smaller home builder, only about $2.5 billion market cap. Last quarter, revenues were down 1%, but profits were up 33%. No dividend yield here, but they do have a good balance sheet. Like you said, very little debt, which is which is definitely nice to see. The technicals, though, they are starting to weaken. I'm seeing some divergences on the MACD. And like you said, it's been kind of sideways since early last summer, right? It hit 55 back in, what was that, late May? So yeah, a year ago. And it's basically been sideways since. You're not collecting a dividend either. So I don't love that. What I would do, I would trim it. I'd probably cut my position in half just because I don't love those technicals. And then I'd have an out. And that out would be any close below $48. $48 per share. Right now it's $55.85. So that's the way I would play Green Brick. Thanks for the call. Now we're moving to a break. Still to come in this podcast, we'll tackle YouTube comment questions and your voice bank calls. So give us a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point is in regards to GDP growth for the balance of this year and into next year. This year, we're almost halfway through, all right? It's called a little over a third. That's facts. And we only have the first quarter GDP, but we do have estimates for the second quarter, and they are pretty high. Let me pull those up now. But I remember the Atlanta GDP Now figure. Let me pull that up. See how fast my computer wants to give it to me. There we go. It currently is sitting at about 4.2%. 4.2%. Think about that. That's pretty nice. Pretty nice growth after the about a 1.6% growth that we saw in the first quarter. Now, that is... That 1.6 is a bit misleading, though, because net exports and inventory subtracted about 1.2 percentage points from the first quarter GDP. And those tend to be pretty noisy categories. You don't really want to rely on them on quarter over quarter basis. But if you look at things like fixed investment, private fixed investment, that was up 5.3% in the first quarter, 2.5% in consumption growth. And if you exclude those just exports and inventory category, overall growth in the economy in the first quarter was 2.8%. That's solid. And that kind of aligns with the growth of earnings in the first quarter, right? We were around 5% or so in corporate earnings. But for the balance of the year, there's likely to be a bit more of a drag. Now, number one is still delayed effects of monetary policy. Number two is depletion of household excess savings. You're seeing that already. We talked about with Dollar Trees, Starbucks of the world. That's likely to be a bit more of a drag. And one of the main ones is actually the fiscal impulse. And there's actually a center. It's called the Hutchinson Center for Fiscal Impact Measure. And what they do is they look at taxes and spending at the federal, state, and local levels, and looking at changes in aggregate demand because of that. And what they said was, you've seen a decline in tax collection since 2022, which increased the what we call FIM by 0.6% in the first quarter. But that's going to shift. And you're going to continue to see decreases. There's waning effects of pandemic era, what we call transfers and subsidies. And that's really what drove economic growth and the budget deficit during the pandemic era was tons of just transfers, government transfer payments. Social Security is a government transfer payment, but so is welfare. So are the checks when they send you $600 checks, right? Whether that's a Biden administration or a Trump administration. Okay. And basically between now and the end of next year, there's going to be continued drag on economic growth from the fiscal authorities, both at the, once again, state, local, and federal level. Now, those are just transfer payments, though. That does not include things like subsidies that drive other economic activity. I think of the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act. There's a lot of subsidies there that are likely to counter a lot of the lower levels of transfer payments. So be aware of that. There are two sides to this. And the big question, I think, will be, there's been a boom in building and manufacturing structures. If you looked at our webinar we did last fall, we talked about that. Huge boom, spurred by federal subsidies, especially for semiconductors, electric vehicles, etc. Now, about 60% of that package has been spent so far. Those packages, shall we say. But that still leaves about 40% left to trickle in over the coming, you know, few years. And so that's going to be a nice background level of stimulus for the economy. Now, what will happen beyond, say, middle of next year? That's even more difficult to figure out because it's really going to be dependent on monetary policy and additional fiscal policy, right? We have an election. We're going to have either a new president or one that was given some sort of directive by the electorate to put their policies in place. And either way, we're going to get a president, most likely, that is willing to spend. It's just a matter of what they're willing to spend on. And so it's hard to say that, okay, the economy is definitely going to reaccelerate next year. A lot will depend on those policies. But what's clear right now is that there's going to be a bit of a drag for the balance of the year, but it will not be dramatic. And it likely won't push us into a recession either. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story. How retirement income guardrails can ease client worries. Effective communication withdrawal strategy improves the client experience. And we'll dig into that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Clyde, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. This is InvestTalk, and you've come to the right place. Justin Klein is here now, taking your calls live. So step up with your questions, 888-99-CHART.
Oh, Steve, Justin, and Luke. I had a question. So currently I have an investment fund that I track and monitor. I also have a retirement account that I track and monitor. And I kind of wanted to do something else. I have another account that I recently set up, and it's about 1% of my main investment account. I was thinking I'd do something along the lines of buying certain companies that I wouldn't want to have in my current investment fund, but, you know, would be a little bit more risky just to see what would happen. I just wanted to get your opinion on the idea of having sort of another account that would be like heavy risk. I think so far I'm making a list of the accounts that I'm interested in, and one of them is Palantir and the other one is Vertiv, but you know, I know the PE ratios are really high right now for both of them, but just your opinion on setting up another account that's low amount of money, but has, again, very risky trades. Thank you.
What you're talking about is a gambling account. You want to gamble. You want something that's more interesting, more exciting, high risk. 1% of your total. That's fine. 1%. Probably learn a lot of lessons. You'll probably learn the hard way, but you know, if it entertains you, and you know, just like gambling, a lot of people like gambling because it's entertaining to them. Gets them excited. And that's what you're talking about. It's a gambling account. It's okay. Right? We all know gambling is bad for our financial health, but a lot of us do it anyway because it's fun. And there's something to say about having some fun. Nothing wrong with that. Just make sure it's a very small percentage. 1%, fine. Throw away. If you lose 1% of your, it's not probably going to change the trajectory of your financial life. Now, if you start getting that into the double digits, then you start to really impact the total risk of your overall portfolio. So that's something different. But having a second gambling account, call it what it is. That's what it is. And that's okay, as long as it's small. Now, you probably noticed that we are answering questions submitted by our viewers to our YouTube channel in the comments section. And that is because we post the podcast in video form each day, each weeknight. And here's one that came in earlier from GSG2 says, I know that biotech is not a sector that you like as they burn cash and are mostly empty promises. That's certainly true. But I'm only looking for a trading point of view, not investing. Does XBI look like a good trade up to $100 right now? I have 225.85 strike calls. Once again, only a trade, not a long position. And this is certainly, I call these the original Ponzi stocks. And that's because they can boom and they can bust. And XBI is a very popular biotech ETF. It's the iShares biotech ETF. And it peaked out around $175 per share back in early 2021. Hit a low recently of, let's see, around $64. Now we're at $89, call it today. And you have 85 strike call. Going out to 2025, I'm assuming that might be January 2025. Well, a lot's going to depend on the liquidity situation. Obviously, right now, this is underperforming. This is a large pullback as of late. It peaked in early March, around 103. Recent low was around 81. And it's now, like I said, up to about 89. So you can see that level of volatility this does tend to have. Let me see where there's some resistance levels. Yeah, big resistance is going to come in right around 92 as well as 95. I don't know if it gets much above that, because what you see after this recent low is that it made a lower low for the first time. So, you know, could you get one more move up into that 92 range, maybe up to 95? Sure. But frankly, I'd probably take my gains on those calls at those levels. Thanks for the call. Now, one thing I want to talk about real quick on those calls, and another reason why I say take your profits sooner rather than later, because I'm assuming they're January 2025 calls, and you have roughly seven, eight months left until they expire. And the time value of those calls will start to decline rapidly within about 90 days. So 90 days of the call expiration. So you only have about 3 or 4 months left to probably hold those before you want to sell them anyway. So you want to be selling into strength. Don't get greedy with them. You get another move up in XBI, take your profits. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a little bit about Berkshire Hathaway, Berkshire B, a name that a lot of people have in their portfolio. And historically, Buffett's done very, very well. But he and Charlie Munger, they knew a decade plus ago that, you know, they were entering their final phase of their lives. And obviously, we had the passing of Charlie Munger recently, unfortunately. And he was 99. Buffett is 93. And when Buffett steps down, either because he wants to or, you know, an unfortunate passing, he needs some sort of support to usher in the new era. And back in 2010 and 2011, they hired Todd Combs as well as Ted Weskler. What's interesting here is that Ted was hired after paying $1 million twice at charity auctions for a lunch with Buffett. And Todd Combs was recruited in 2010 after writing to Munger, asking him to meet. So they shot their shot and it worked out for them, right? So kudos to them. And basically, they've handed over, Buffett has handed over a small portion of the Berkshire portfolio for them to manage. Now, Combs' background is in insurance. He used to work at Progressive, so competitor to Geico. And he also interned with one of the Tiger Cub funds. And he ran what was called Castle Point Capital, or he founded Castle Point Capital. So he had experience, same with Weskler. And he started a private equity group. So they have backgrounds in the industry. They didn't just come out of nowhere. And their first couple of years were really good. In 2000, I think it was 12 and 13, they crushed the S&P. They even beat Warren in those years. But since then, it's been a mixed bag. Buffett still runs about 90% of Berkshire's investments. So they're only dealing with 10%. But during Buffett's career at Berkshire, he's beat the S&P by 4.3 percentage points per year. Think about that. 4.3%. That doesn't sound like a lot, but when you do it for year after year, decade after decade, that is a massive outperformance. But these two new, let's call them proteges, since the pandemic, they have not been doing very well. Both in 2021 and 2022, they missed the S&P returns by double digits. Double digits. And they've produced an average total return of about 7.8% over the past decade. The S&P was up 12, and Buffett, 10.2. And they trailed the index in 7 out of those 10 years. So over that time, they trailed trailed the 165% return from Buffett and 211% return from the S&P, and they were only at 113%. Now, what are the differences? First, they hold stocks a shorter time period. Buffett always wants to hold forever, but studies show since 2010, Buffett sold his entire holdings in 63 positions with an average hold time of 4 years and 3 months. The proteges exited 48 positions and held for only 2 years and 10 months. And Buffett runs a more concentrated portfolio. Mainly, though, that's due to the large Apple holding, and that's something that both of them invested in. They both invested in Apple. That's why Berkshire has a total value of $175 billion in Apple shares. And that's why everyone talks about them selling Apple. No, they just trimmed a little. They just have such a large position. So the worry here is that if you go outside of just their Apple bet, which was good, but Warren did that. We've owned Apple for a long time, right? So it wasn't a hard one to get. They only have a few winners. Visa and MasterCard, which is kind of a echo of Buffett's investment in American Express. And they bought DaVita, which is a dialysis company. And they bought 41% stake in it. And it did well initially, and then it went on hard times because there was some controversy around their clinics, etc. And then Charter Communications, Liberty Media, they invested in that. And that fell a lot because of high debt. They also invested in Paramount Global and just recently started to sell it after being down over 60%. So with all these built-in advantages, right, access to Warren, access to capital that comes in through Geico, they haven't been doing very well. So there's a very strong worry out there, a warranted worry, that who's to replace Warren? And it's pretty clear they haven't found the right people to do it. Let's go to Bill in Northern California looking at BGS.
Yeah, hi, Justin. I don't know if you guys kind of follow the stock. I know you've had it in the past. News came out, their earnings are down. You know, I read some of the stuff on it, and it, you know, it seems to me kind of blasé news. Like, it's not, you know, the market always makes a bigger deal out of something. It doesn't seem like the company's falling apart. It's short term, and within 2 years, they could easily, you know, be on the up move. And you know, I'm looking for like a value play. I've owned shares of this for a year and a half, 2 years, and I have it from like the mid-teens down to $10 recently. So I just mean, as far as a long-term hold or adding to it at a value at a bottom, you know, get a little discount, add a few more shares. What do you think?
All right, this is B&G Foods, and this is a name that we had owned for clients in the past, but the distance past. So I want to say it was the mid-2010s, so 2015, 2016, that era. I don't remember exactly. I'd have to go back and look, but it's definitely been a while. And the reason we sold it was twofold. We kind of saw the era of low interest rates eventually going away, as well as the move away from packaged foods. You know, they bought Jolly Green Giant. And for everyone out there, B&G Foods, they kind of have an interesting model where they have a bunch of brands, a lot of smaller brands, not a ton that you recognize, but they're out there in the grocery stores, and they tend to go buy up their competitors, things that are maybe they're having a rough time, and they plug that in to their model and their distribution, and they are able to fix the brands, shall we say. And buy them cheap, and then they could spin them off, sell them high, or they just live off the cash flow. But a lot of times they do that with borrowed money. They leverage out their balance sheet to buy those brands. So it's really a growth through acquisition model. And that worked really well when interest rates were low. But that's no longer the case. That's no longer the case. And that is why they continue to struggle. earnings just continue to head lower. They made $2.26 in 2020. This year, they're supposed to make 83 cents, down 16% from last year. And last year, it was 99 cents, down 8% from the previous year. Of $1.08, which is down 43% from the previous year from there. So the trend is just lower. And what you're doing here is you're chasing that 9.18% dividend. And what's going to happen is this dividend is going to go away. It is going to go away. And they've already cut their dividend. It was at 47 cents. Now it's at 19 cents per quarter. But it is going to go away. Return on equity is negative. This is not a business that can operate in this environment with high costs of capital, high cost to borrow. They have over $2 billion in long-term debt and a market cap of $650 million. That's what the market's telling you. You have to listen. You need to move on from this name. That simple.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you very much.
No problem, Bill. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, you know, you can like, you have to be honest with yourself from time to time. I would say every day, right? You have to be honest with yourself. And sometimes the situations change and businesses no longer have the same tailwinds they once did. And I talk about this as private equity, and that's what kind of this business is. It's a mini private equity company focused on packaged foods. And I've been talking about how private equity is not doing well and not likely to do well going forward in a higher interest rate environment. And BGS is showing that in spades. And so you have to listen to the problems that the company has. And that's why it's down 28% today. So lick your wounds, learn your lessons, move on, focus on companies with low debt. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here, to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Vincent from Lemoore, California, and I'm calling about Equinox. I believe the ticker symbol is EQIX, and Digital Realty, DLR. I'm looking to get into the digital REIT space, and I'm wondering which one has a better valuation and which one seems like a good buy for the next 3 or 4 years. Thank you. Love to hear your answer and love what you guys do. Have a good day.
Are you looking at Digital Realty? DLR is the symbol, as well as Equinix, EQIX. And these are both operators of data centers. And Equinix is a bit bigger of a name, $73 billion market cap. Digital Realty, not small, $45 billion market cap. So both pretty big, but they're in the REIT space. And so they are going to they're going to have some correlation with interest rates. And so if interest rates go up, you know, that's going to weigh on the REIT space and these companies in general. Now, they have had some recent tailwinds with the AI craze and so many companies looking to deploy AI capabilities, and they need these data centers to route the requests into and process and spit out the results, right? And so they've been growing their top line in the mid, with Equinix, it's been in the, Digital Realty, excuse me, that was in the high teens, call it, throughout 2023. Equinix was more in the low teens. But remember, Equinix is a bigger company with bigger revenues, and so it's easier to grow your top line. And so, you know, from a total growth of sales perspective, they were about equal. Earnings this year for Dozier Realty are supposed to be up 2% and 7% next year. Now, when I say earnings, I mean funds from operations. That's how you look at quote-unquote earnings in the REIT space. And Equinix up 9% this year and 8% next year. So Equinix has certainly more consistent growth. But when you look at profitability, let's look at profitability, because that's what we always go to number one. Equinix, 8% return on equity, whereas 6% for Digital Realty. Both not amazing, but I'm going to side on the one that has less debt, only about $4 billion in debt on a $73 billion market cap. I like that. And higher return on assets, return on equity, etc. So I'm picking one or the other. I'm going to go with Equinix over Digital Realty. Thanks for the call. Now, let's get to a final question from our YouTube channel. And it's from Carter Erickson. Says, do you think NSSC is a good long-term hold? NSSC. Interesting name here. They manufacture intrusion and fire alarms, building access control systems, and electronic locking devices. Their business has been booming. Earnings pre-pandemic were 33 cents, and they're supposed to earn $1.35 this year and $1.48 next year. About a 1% dividend yield, 1.6%. 1.6%. I saw 1.6 somewhere. 0.9% dividend yield. And sorry, $1.6 billion market cap. That's what I was trying to say. And let's take a look at the chart here. The chart is certainly an uptrend. Everything looks fine there. Let me look at profitability. Return equity, 31%. Return on invested capital, 31%. No debt. I like that. So it is a bit expensive. Enterprise value EBIT is at 29. That's a bit high for my liking. I don't love that. I think the valuations have gone a little ahead of itself. And I'd have to look into what's driving this. What about their business is suddenly booming? You wouldn't think that they'd be doing as well as they are. I'd really have to dig into why and feel confident that the sustainability of this growth is there. Because if I'm just looking on the surface, video surveillance, fire alarms, door locking products, I think that that is applied to commercial buildings. And if less people are going into commercial facilities for work, I'd have to really be confident in that system, that it's being deployed at a level that is sustainable. And if it is, then I would give this a thumbs up, because that's good. I like the balance sheet. I like the profitability. That's NSSC. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And I hope you've heard that Invest Talk podcast is also available in video form over on our YouTube channel. Just search Invest Talk with 2 T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.